to another episode of Swapping Joysticks. I'm your host, Ben Ostwick, otherwise known as Biggest Benus. And joining me, as always, is Ed Nightingale.
Hi, Ben.
Hello. It's a very special episode.
It's a very special episode. We have a guest who we will bring straight in. You may know him as the voice of Bayek in Assassin's Creed, but also he has a brand new game coming out called Tales of Kenzera. It's Abu Bakr Salim. Abu, welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me, man.
How's it going?
Oh, nervous.
Not because of this, like, I hope. I'm sure. No.
Honestly, I'm very nervous. I'm sort of trying to deal with the madness of everything that's happening and kind of be okay with it. I think I am.
I'm sure you're okay. So we're recording this like a week before Tales of Kenzera Zao comes out. So I guess, how are you feeling? What are your plans in the next week? Is it just waiting to see what happens, or are there things still to be done?
There's quite a lot still to be done in regards to, like, calming my nerves and calming the team's nerves. It's now at a point where we have no control, right? It's a train that's just continuing to go. We're all feeling nervous, both, you know, and excited as well as terrified, but at the same time we're all just really happy that we've got this far. This is the first time we've made a game as a team, worked together as a team, like, first time I've made a game, like, and it's, I'm just really happy we got here. You know, we've been able to announce to some really, you know, on a really cool stage, talk about the game to really cool people. Like, yeah, it's very surreal. Very, very surreal.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it the first announcement was the Game Awards? That's when that was the big reveal.
Yep, it was.
How did that feel like?
It was on that stage? it was frightening because it became real then. You know, it sort of, like, beforehand we were building this game behind the scenes and it was our little secret. And, you know, we were kind of just building it as we were going along. And then as soon as we announced at the Game Awards, and as soon as I stood on the stage and I told the world about it, it became very real. It became like, this is a thing that we're launching on this date on these platforms. It was like, oh, okay, now we've got to actually deliver.
There's no going back.
You know? Yeah, there's no going back. And, you know, the thing is as well, like, I think as I was there as well, just talking about it, I was very much like, I was being very emotional. And at the same time as I was being emotional in my head, I was thinking, oh man, I really hope they like the trailer. I really hope they're going to like the trailer. Because it's like that whole X Factor, you know, sort of sob story you see on TV. I had that moment of like, oh man, this is my X Factor sob story. What am I doing? And then, you know, so happy that it actually landed really well.
It really, really did. Like, I was, like, obviously we've got the reviews coming up and then there's the release and the feedback then. But, like, right now I've been watching quite a lot of videos of it. I've been sneaking a peek at Ed playing it as well.
Yeah.
And I was watching some videos, like, all the comments are just nothing but endless positivity from, like, the ones that are liked. Obviously you'll get the odd one, but, like, there's so much positivity and, like, goodwill for this game. How does that feel?
It just feels incredible. Like, again, it's that whole thing of, you know, you don't know how you're going to be supported, essentially, or how you're going to be, like, taken in. And I think, like, for me, one of the big learnings now that I will take with me to everything that I do is, like, as long as you're just honest and vulnerable and truthful, like, you're kind of immortal, because at the end of the day, you've got, you know, you've kind of bared all and you've got nothing to hide. So, you know, I sort of went in with this sort of mentality of, like, no, we've always got to ensure that we've got to always earn the trust of the people that we're sharing the story with. And that's through making a really cool and fun game. But the fact that the support has been there from, like, day dot has just been just utterly surreal. Like, I can't even put it into words. It's the reason why we do so many giveaways. And it's the reason why we're so communicative on socials. Like, I'm not really a social guy. Like, I don't like social media. Like, I find it very weird. But the reason why I think I've been so active on it is because of just the love from the people. Like, it's just been so real, man. Like, so real.
And it's obvious that you are you know, you play games, you're into games a lot, and you're kind of, I guess in some ways it feels like you're sort of living the dream, you know, getting to go on all these amazing platforms and speak to all these like super cool people. Like, how does that feel then from sort of being a gamer and having that love for gaming?
Yeah, it's again, just a really cool experience. And it's so different from like acting as well. Like, you know, because normally in acting, you're traveling around the world, you know, filming on really cool locations. Then the press tour happens and you get to talk to some, you know, people here and there. But the thing is, it's like, it always feels like it's part of the job. Whereas with this, it really does feel like, you know, it's just me, Abu, just talking about what I'm doing, which is like a hobby. Like, it's really good fun. And like, you know, I'm having a great time with it. So yeah, it's nice to almost as well feel like a gamer who is now making a game, because you also have such a respect, like an unlimited respect for game developers as a whole, because making games is not easy. Like, it is a mission, man. Like, it is like so hard. And so, you know, you're putting a face behind these games, which I know it sounds really weird, but I think a lot of the time you kind of forget, right? You forget that there are people behind these things. And I think something that I've taken with me on this whole thing is just how much work is put into making an experience to be shared. And there are so many experiences out there. There's so many games out there, you know?
Yeah. Far too many.
Too many to play. Yeah. I was going to say, like, how is it for you, like, in regards to getting so many games that you have to, like, either review or talk about or just share? Like, it must be so much.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm terrible because I'm very much a completionist. So I have to, once I start something, I have to do everything and I have to finish it. And when you've got...
No social, you know, life.
I have no social
brilliant
life. You know, when, you know, I reviewed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and that's, oh, you've got 2 weeks to like rush through this 65-hour game and just have no life for those 2 weeks.
Oh,
and
it's my like, God.
It's hard playing games under that pressure, because I think you have a different mindset of sort of being analytical more than sort of just sitting back and enjoying it. And sometimes you have to remind yourself to just say, no, you're going to just sit and enjoy this game for what it is and appreciate it and not overthink it so much.
Yeah. That's I can't imagine having like the pressure of having to sort of like, I play games and enjoy them because, you know, when the time presents itself, but the idea of like having to not only like play them but also analyze them, man.
Do you play games? Do you look at games now that you play with a different eye?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Oh, I find it so hard to like now play a game and look at it in a sense of just pure enjoyment. I think the last game I played of pure enjoyment was probably Gato Roboto. You know, that crazy weird cat game. Like, yeah, it was so surreal that I kind of was able to kind of escape in it and kind of lose myself. Whereas everything now is a study. It's like, what is their game loop? How does it work? Let's hear their music. How do they use sound? You know, how does the character feel to move? And I'm like, I need to stop. Like, I really just need to enjoy this, you know?
So what got you into gaming in the first place? What were some of the first games that you played and enjoyed?
Yeah, so I'd say the first sort of games that I played were, from my earliest memory or recollection of memory, is on the Mega Drive. It was Golden Axe. Yeah, man, it's a great station, honestly. Golden Axe and Sonic. And those are the sort of the games that I remember my father playing with my father, essentially. But I'd say, like, you know, my true love for games, or like, you know, the moment where I, you know, saw that games are an art form rather than necessarily as just this kind of entertainment thing that you kind of, you know, pull on, was when I played Kingdom Hearts on PlayStation 2. It was a moment where I realized, oh, you can actually tell a story and move people here. Like, and it was just really powerful. I think even like, you know, playing Ocarina of Time on the N64, it was a great game, but I still saw it as like a game in a way, you know? And rather than like, you know, falling in love with the story of Link and Zelda. But really, yeah, it was Kingdom Hearts that sort of transformed my perspective of games entirely, just because I think it caught me at a time again when I was growing up and I'm learning, you know, I'm taking in stories a bit more, And also, I think it was the protagonist's sort of simplicity of just wanting to bring his friends back. I don't know why, it just really connected with me and resonated with me. And that's why I just fell in love with the power of storytelling through games.
I mean, the taste level here. I grew up on Sonic and Zelda, so I'm with you.
Right.
I actually just recently played the remastered version of Kingdom Hearts, just a few hours of it, and I was like, this holds up really well. It really holds up well. And actually,
honestly, the thing is if I played it now, though, I probably wouldn't have any idea what the hell is going on. But like at the time when I was playing it, it all made sense.
Yeah.
I swear things make more sense when you're a kid anyway.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, PS2 was for me as well. Actually, I think Final Fantasy X was the first time I realized that it was kind of, the power of storytelling, like in a game. So, great console. I was watching a video. We're going to talk about it later with your, because you had a silver PS2, was it?
Yeah, it was the Aqua. It was the Aqua PS2, man. Nice. Oh, what a PS2. I remember getting that in Argos. That was fantastic.
And the little logo that you could turn over if you were having it on the side or on the top.
Yeah. Oh, man, so good.
Did you find out if it still works?
I didn't actually plug it in. I was too scared. I didn't want to ruin the I didn't want to ruin the moment.
That's fair. So how did that passion for games then translate into a career in acting and becoming a voice actor?
So again, like I think I've always been I've always loved the idea of telling stories. So storytelling is my I think that's the thing that's really it's the anchor to everything that I do. And the stories that were being told to me through games, as I said, like Kingdom Hearts, or even, within the Warcraft series, and that kind of stuff, it really sort of made me want to jump in and play these characters, right? And the closest, place I could find that was essentially doing drama at school, playing these characters, jumping into their shoes. And it just sort of naturally evolved there. I didn't know that you could, as I said, I didn't know you could have a career in games. I was very much of the mentality of like, these games are just made by like magical people and suddenly, they pop into your screen and whatnot. So I had no idea about that. But like, as sort of time went on and I realized that, acting is really cool and you can actually make a, have a career out of it. I still always loved and played games. And funnily enough, like even when it comes to the characters that I play, I always base them off a game character. That's where my start off point is. So, it just sort of kind of developed from there. And it was only until I did Assassin's Creed Origins where the reality of the fact that people can make, are making these things kind of hit me. Mm. And, it was stepping into the Montreal office and sort of seeing these people really enjoying the work that they're doing and the art that they were crafting, where it really inspired me to be like, oh man, like I want to do this. I want to tell stories in games as well. I want to, I want to be more actively creating these experiences rather than necessarily just, playing a small cog in it, I think that's where the seed started. But my acting really, as I've always said, it's always been inspired by this, the power of storytelling in games as a whole.
Bayek was just Assassin's Creed games. That's actually the only one I've managed to play to the very, very end, and I did it really quickly because I just love that story. And that was like the one, like the Assassin's Creed game that really kind of hit home with me. And I played Bayek as well.
That's so cool.
So you were saying that when you're playing acting or when you're playing characters, you kind of base them on video game actors. With Bayek, did you do any? Was like the direction so good you didn't need to, or did you in your head base it on any character?
It was actually, funnily enough, based and taken from Tristan Dallala. He played, who did he play again in Black Flag? Did you play Black Flag?
I didn't.
I got mine with the PS4 and it's still wrapping, which I need
there
to
was, he played a really cool, he ended up having like his own spin-off, like DLC sort of assassin.
What was his name again? Sorry.
His name was Tristan Dallala, and he played, it's on the tip of my tongue. I'm gonna see it now and it's gonna kill me and it's gonna annoy me. Oh God, who did he play? Adewale. So Adewale in Black Flag. He played Adewale in Black Flag, and that was where my starting point for Bayek came in came in from. And really, truly, actually looking at all the previous assassins and what they did, you know, you look at Ezio and you know, what Roger Craig Smith did with that, like, that was really, really awesome. So, yeah, it sort of... that's kind of where I kind of began. And I also wanted him to be his own being, right? His own person. Mm. So, yeah.
And Tristan is in...
He plays Kalunga. So the casting of Tales of Kinzera all stems from my relationship with friends and my kind of my journey there. You know, Tristan was the first person I acted with in a motion capture space for Assassin's Creed, and he took really good care of me. So I was like, cool, thank you for this. I'm going to bring you in my in a game that I make. You know, Steve Toussaint was incredibly welcoming on House of the Dragon when I've just, you know, joined, because it's very hard as an actor to join a season of the second season of a TV show when the first season is already done, right? So that was that, you know, that moment, and I wanted to bring him on. And, you know, I could honestly go through the personal stories of each and every actor. But yeah, Tristan was the first casting, essentially, of the game, because I was like, yeah, this guy is dope and I really like him.
What a nice loop.
I love that it's come full circle. That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about Tales of Kinzera then. So it's out next week. It is very much based
out this week, because this is going out on Monday.
That is true.
Yeah, so that just is true. Don't want to trick anyone.
And it is, as you've been very open about, sort of based on the story of sort of you and your father and your experience with that. And you touched on this earlier, but why was it important for you to be so open about that story in particular?
Yeah, I think, again, it was that whole thing of, if I had the opportunity, again, in my head, if I have an opportunity to tell a story, I'd want it to be as authentic and truthful as possible. And so, like, really, something that, again, and the driving factor, because I think there was a part of me that knew that this was going to be a very long and hard journey making this game. And so I needed it to come from a source where it felt like I had to do this. You know, it had to come from a place of passion. And, you know, trying to convince as well people to join me on this project who, again, I've never made a game before. I've just voice acted in one. You know, it's like, to really get them on board, I had to basically essentially be like, hey, I'm telling this story from the heart. Are you going to come and join me? So that's why it had to come from such a personal place, because if I don't ever get the chance of doing something like this again, you know, I want to be proud as well of the project that I was able to kind of create and release out there, you know. So that's where it really stems from. It was a drive of needing to express myself in a true form, but also in the same time tell other people as well, like, I see games as an art. They're not just a thing that you kind of enjoy then throw away. Like, it is an art form. It's a form of expression. It's got its ups and downs, and the more pure I can be with that, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a short film that's just come out as well. Sort of is you again sort of talking about that relationship, which I just want to shout out because it's really beautifully done.
Thank you.
I think anyone who's interested in the game, go and
I'll post a link in the description as well, so people can
it was one of those pieces as well. Like, it's funny, you know, the sort of the Ridley Scott crew have really been supportive.
Casual name drop there.
Yeah, I know.
Nice.
Look, they've been really supportive of the artistic endeavors that I've wanted to go forward with. You know, they've really seen, I feel like they've seen something in me that they want to champion. And especially, you know, I started the studio at the same time as getting raised by Wolves, right? So, like, it was one of those moments of like, yeah, this is, they believe in this, so I've got to go with this. So it just was almost like full circle to sort of, you know, then make, you know, my directorial debut of a film, like, and you know, be something so personal with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was really the film was such a process, man.
Yeah, I bet. And the game itself, in terms of the process, has that been quite difficult, or has it been actually quite healing for you to sort of go through it?
Yeah, it's not been difficult. I'd say, like, on that aspect, I'd say it's been it's and funnily enough, it's not. I don't know whether healing is the word. I'd say like it's been welcoming, like in a sense of like it's allowed me to grow and push and play and discover things about not only my relationship with my father, but also relationships with just myself and my grief. Like it's been really eye-opening, essentially, as a whole. And I've realized as well, the more open I am and the more vulnerable I am and the more sort of truthful I am about it all, the easier the process has been. You know, reflecting and connecting it to the mechanics as well of the gameplay and also to the story. Like it's all been part and parcel a brilliant and beautiful experience.
And it's based as well on Bantu Tales, which yes. are sort of these traditional stories that you experience mm-hmm. with your father as well. What mm-hmm. are some of those tales about? Do you have a favorite one as well?
Oh man, I do. It's a long one, and I would just suggest going to read it. But it's a tale essentially about a king who grieves for his wife, and he basically puts his whole village in a space of mourning, and he sends the doctor or the witch, you know, the sort of the shaman of the town, essentially to go and find his wife back or bring his wife back. And it's a beautiful tale, really interesting and really cool. And depending on who tells you it or where you read it from, it evolves over time. But yeah, and again, the thing about Bantu storytelling, and you know, a lot of this, you know, the stories as well are kind of inspired by the stories that my father would tell me, as well as, you know, kind of what I would experience and learn out there. The thing, the beauty of them are it's very much an oral storytelling tradition. So it's all about sitting around and just talking about it and sharing it orally, rather than me giving you a book and then basically saying, you know, have at it. So yeah, there is something really powerful and potent about the Bantu myths and legends that I just wanted to express again in an honest way, because these are the stories that I grew up on. Do you know what I mean? This is the stories that I've been surrounded by. So yeah, it was really integral to sort of represent that in this game.
Even just you sort of saying that story, I'm like, okay, I can see the sort of the threads of
you see what I mean?
Of where that's come in. But also I like how some of the other stories come in with the different abilities that you collect in the game and how that's all integrated. Yeah. Like it feels just a real celebration of those stories.
It is a celebration. I think that was, you know, what I wanted to give from the get-go, was that this is a celebration rather than necessarily an education. I don't want to teach people like about Bantu myth or elements of that, right? I want people to go down a Wikipedia wormhole about the Mpundulu and about like all that kind of stuff, rather than necessarily me teach you about it. So yeah, that's really why you know, where it comes from and why it's a thing. It's like it's all about celebrating these stories.
Were any other family members involved in your game? We saw in the short film that your daughter was testing it out.
My daughter was also, yeah, my wife was in it as well. Like she, you know, she helped, you know, she was, I mean, she's been there from the get-go, so from the inception of this whole thing. You know, I'd say, funnily enough, they were really the only, well, you know, my wife really was the only person who knew what kind of game I was making. I didn't really tell my family what game I'm making and where it's coming from until I announced at the Game Awards.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was very like, what's the word? Not reserved, but like I was a bit afraid of sharing, you know, sharing it with them.
What was their response like, when it was announced?
I think they got it. They understood. They were like, oh, okay, this is how you express, this is how you share. And I think that was, you know, something, especially from my mum, I'll never forget, like, my mum, you know, I always as well said, like, look, I've got to find a way of getting my mum to play a game, because she will never play a game for the life of her. But when she saw this, and she kind of, you know, and even me telling her, like, it's going to be in Swahili and everything, she was like, wow, I don't think I would have ever have seen this. This is amazing. And it really moved her. And I think that was the point, right? It's the point is to move people, to inspire. And so that's what's really exciting about it all.
Yeah. What are some of the key inspirations then behind, I guess, the gameplay side of it?
So again, it all stems from grief. And what I mean by that is that it's like, okay, put it this way. So I knew that, you know, we were going to be a small team making this game. So the decisions that we had to make were very much like, it was important. You can't pivot. Like, pivoting for us it's career suicide. Like, you just couldn't do it, right? So when it came to the design elements of it all and the gameplay elements and factors of it, we again looked and focused at what grief meant, what grief is, and what that journey is. And for me, it's messy, it's chaotic. There's a lot of agency that you have in grief that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect. And what I mean by this is, so for example, the Metroidvania genre, Metroidvanias are built on this idea of being thrown into something that you have no idea about, and you have to learn about it over time. The longer you spend time in it, the more comfortable you get in it. And that's essentially what grief is. It's like, it's something that even though you could expect it to happen, and it happens to everyone, when it actually happens, you have no idea what you're doing. You have no idea what you're feeling. And it's like, for the first time, it's like a storm. It's madness, right? But these elements that you kind of discover about yourself, about the way that you see things, about the way that, you know, the world just continues spinning and you feel like, why isn't no one listening to me? It's very isolating. All these things end up becoming elements that you then are able to use in order to get through it. So, you know, the abilities that you gain and the obstacles that you see to begin with, they're all there to show you, like, okay, here's a barrier. This is something that you're not going to get past, but you have to almost go full circle in a way of experiencing it, getting it, then moving forward, then using it. And that's essentially what grief is. You'll feel angry, you'll feel sad, you'll feel almost a sense of relief. And maybe the first time you may feel these things, it feels overwhelming. But then when it comes back at you, you know, be it like a month, a year, or 10 years down the line, you almost use it as fuel to drive you forward and doing something really, really cool or putting it in some way, shape, or form. And that's kind of what, you know, inspired elements like the abilities that you gain, you know, and that sense of, as well as even the combat. Like, for me, what I was really crucial about the combat and even the mask switching. So I'll talk about the mask switching a bit. The mask switching comes from this idea that you're constantly having to wear different masks wherever you go, even though you are suffering behind that mask. So how quickly you change that mask is very important. So for example, me talking to you now, my mother could call me right now and I'd have to change my mask and change the way that I talk to my mother. It's just natural, it's instinctive, right? This phone call will end and I'll sit here in a moment of silence as a different mask. It's my own mask. And so these masks are constantly switching, and it's the way of essentially progressing through life, moving forward. You have to wear these masks. And that's something that I really wanted to represent in the game, and how quickly you switch between the masks and how you have to, you know, depending on the obstacle that you're facing and fighting. And then when it comes to the combat, you know, depending on your play style, you can button mash, you can go crazy on it, or you can be very, you know, surgical and choose the moments of when you go for. And that is just, that's genuinely life. That's the kind of madness of and the sense of freedom that you have on this journey. You don't know what to do. Do you, you know, go out raving and try and expel yourself that way? Or do you just sit at home and eat a tub of ice cream? Both ways aren't wrong or right. They are just your way. And that's the option that you kind of are filled with. I remember, you know, after my father passed, I was almost struck with this sense of responsibility or feeling like an adult, you know, of like, oh, right, I have to be the man now. I have to be the man of the house, or I have to, you know, take responsibility. What does that look like? What does that mean? And I think, like, that's what I wanted to represent in the combat. So that's essentially how the design and elements of the game came by. It came through looking at life experiences and journeys that we go through, and even sharing the stuff with the team as well and what they've experienced, and then almost concocting and deducing and refining essentially what that means to experience it as a game, to experience it as an interactive sort of form. So yeah, that's kind of where it all sort of started. And it's funny because, again, like, you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, the mechanic is just switching between two masks. And it's like, yeah, but it stemmed from all this X, Y, and Z.
Honestly, like, anybody playing the game after listening to that, that you, yeah, you see it in a different way.
Yeah.
You really will.
Yeah, absolutely. And were there any sort of specific influences aside from the Bantu Tales that sort of were really influential to, I guess, the setting and the story?
Yeah, I think really essentially, it comes from experiences that I've, you know, that I've had, you know, in life, you know, things that I've enjoyed is, you know, a lot of, like, for example, like the animation feels quite like manga-y, like you've got like the cool sort of Kamehameha beam, right? That's obviously, you know, my love for Dragon Ball Z when I was growing up as a kid, you know, elements of like the you know, even the art style, we wanted to kind of capture this sense of, again, very much like an anime manga sort of vibe to it, because this is the stuff that I grew up to as a kid, and this is the stuff that I really, really loved. You know, I'd say like the influences are, you know, both from real life as well as from other games, and it's as I say, like, it is just pulling a celebration of them all. The creation of the universe of Tales of Kinzera, for example, really is coming from a love of storytelling, again, of being like, you know, I grew up basically playing Pokemon on my Game Boy, watching it on TV, then collecting the cards. Like, I just wanted to be in the world, right? So, you know, that's sort of where the Tales of Kinzera universe stems from. It comes from a sense of wanting to be in these worlds, pulling, you know, looking at Discworld and looking at Lord of the Rings, all this stuff. So, yeah, it's a mixture of everything, man. Like, it really is. And it's just, again, a celebration of my childhood and what my father meant to me as a kid.
Hmm. That's really cool to hear all of that as well, because yeah, I think people will look at it and be like, okay, well, it's very clearly sort of inspired by Africa and sort, yes, of African tradition. And that's something we don't see very much in gaming. But then hearing you speak, it's like, but there are all these other influences as well. And it's this, yeah, real like melting pot of all these different things, which is,
yeah,
is very, I guess, you. And that's what makes the game, I think, so authentic.
Yeah. I think that's why I've seen this game to the end of it all. It's because it comes from a place of authenticity. It comes from myself. And the more vulnerable and the more open I am, the more honest the game is, you know, and the more kind of honest these pieces of elements come through. So yeah, it's been really important to just be truthful.
Yeah. Why do you think that we don't see enough games with this kind of setting, with this kind of authenticity? Because it's playing it, yeah, it feels like it's something that's really fresh. And I obviously that's a great thing for the game, but I almost wish that kind of setting wasn't seen as that. Like, we should, yeah, see this kind of stuff all the time.
I think it's a mixture of things. I think, like, you know, a lot of the people, again, like, who I would say are, you know, people write what you know. Like, you got to write what you know. That's important, you know. And I think, like, a lot of the people who are in control and who sort of lead the charge on this stuff, you know, why should they, you know, write about sort of African myth and legends if they know about it? You know what I mean? And I'd like, and that's totally fine. But again, I think I've been very fortunate to be in a position of where I, and this is why I really wanted to, you know, run a game studio and tell these stories, is because I knew that I wanted to tell it from an authentic place. And I've been very fortunate to be able to do that. And so I think over time, I hope, you know, we're able to kind of see more kind of independent developers and independent storytellers tell these stories and have it championed by, like, the EAs out there. You know, I think, like, that's what we need more of. You know, you look at even like Prince of Persia and the fact that, you know, it was, you know, VO'd in Farsi. Like, that's dope. You know what I mean? Like, that's really, you want more of that. And I think, like, that's just what will happen naturally. But I think, you know, we're in a time now, and this is what I love about the games industry as well. It's like, the games industry is constantly evolving and constantly moving and constantly changing because it's based on tech. And it's also, and the thing about tech is, and the beauty of what tech can bring, is it tries to make it as accessible to everyone as possible, right? That's essentially it. You know, nowadays, like, everyone's technically a gamer. If you've got Candy Crush on your phone, I'm sorry, you are a gamer. Like, you know, it's like,
I tell my mum that. She just sits playing solitaire. I'm like, Mum, you're a gamer.
You're a gamer. This
Wordle,
is it.
Even Wordle is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this is it. Yeah. So, like, it's becoming, you know, a thing where we are all going to be playing these games, and you're going to inspire someone out there like me who had no idea how to make a game, want to make a game. Mm-hmm. It happens, and they tell a story. And I think, like, that's essentially what will happen. I think the one thing that I do hope that this game does do is, as well, it invites other people to see, like, hey, this is actually a really cool setting, and it's really, you know, beautiful. I want more. And, you know, even if someone out there is like, actually, I could do a better job than this guy in this story, like, that's even better, because then, you know, it's that sense of just constantly pushing forward and growing with it, or yeah, you know.
And you're talking about big companies like EA noticing it and stuff like that. Have you had many, like, much feedback from like the big companies and people high up there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's funny, actually, after the Game Awards, I think everyone was like, oh wow, this is actually really cool. Yeah. And so I ended up, you know, talking with a lot of really cool people. I mean, the fact that, like, for example, like PlayStation, you know, they gave us, you know, we've got this deal with them that puts our game on their premium and plus, you know, sort of platform and catalog on day of release. Like, that doesn't happen. And that's, you know, and that's what was really great about it as well. Like, and it was solely because, I think, you know, truly spurred on by the Game Awards. Like, they, you know, they were inspired by it. And I think, like, even the support from Xbox and the support from Nintendo, it's all come from this place of, like, this is really cool. He's speaking from the heart here. You don't really see that much, right? So I think, like, that's what's been really lovely about this whole journey, in a way, is that we've been able to build a community of people, you know, just of everyone, but also, you know, have people within these positions of, you know, the Xboxes, the Microsofts, the you know, the Sonys, they're all eyes are on it, you know? And I think that's what's really dope.
I guess that adds pressure, but it's good pressure.
Oh, totally. Like, it makes it all terrifying. But at the same time, it's like, again, as I say, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm just hoping that people will enjoy the game and you know, take something from it, really, on an emotional level. You know, again, I'm not aiming to be, like, the best Metroidvania out there, man. I'm just celebrating the genre of it all, you know, enjoying it. And I think that's what we're all kind of driven by. We're not trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel. We're just playing within the limitations of a Metroidvania genre and pushing it to as far as we can get to.
Yeah. Now, the next question, I'm going to let you say it, but I'm, like, genuinely, one of the things I've been listening, because I've been wandering in and out while you've been playing it, but the music is just phenomenal. Like,
it's sensational, isn't it?
Sitting last night watching the credits, and I was like, this music is just incredible.
I just wanted to ask about it, really, like, because I love that sort of mix of, like, orchestration, but also then all the traditional sort of instruments and singing that are in there. It's a really beautiful mix. Like, what was your kind of aim with the music? Was there anything in particular that you were going for?
Yeah, so when I brought Nanita on very early, and this was something that, again, what I realize is not normal. Normally you bring in a composer, like, by the end of the game or near the end of the game. But I brought in Nanita, like, super early because I wanted her to kind of grow and evolve with us on this whole thing. And, you know, I remember telling Nanita this. I was like, this is a communication between two different generations, between two different cultures, in a way. You've got the modern day sort of, like, you know, Zuberi sort of mentality, like, basically me, this first generation, you know, Kenyan or Brit, in a way. Like, you know, I've got my history is Kenyan, obviously, but I'm very much London. You know, I was brought up in England, even. And then you've got the father, who is very much Kanzeran and very much kind of, you know, traditional, and that was essentially speaking through Zhao. So for me, it was really important to capture this clash of, like, trying to communicate through the music. You know, when you've got the drums, then you've got the synth, and sometimes you're like, how does this mix? And then when it does, you're like, oh my God, it makes sense. And, like, that's really something. And even with the voice, like, the power of the voice, and you don't understand what's being said, but you do at the same time, which is why we really wanted even the lyrics to be in, you know, Swahili or Zulu or Xhosa. Like, it's to communicate something to on a different level, even though it's a human voice. And so, like, that was something that, you know, me and Anita and even Rob, our technical audio, you know, lead, essentially, really kind of sat down and just went through. You know, it's that same thing of, like, you know, you look at Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you've got the Spider-Man hero it's theme film. Right. Such a good film. It's such a good film.
You've got the art book back there.
Oh, yeah. God, it's fantastic. Really. And like, but the music was what really stuck, you know, really hit me, yeah. Because it was heroic, but then of Miles. And like, you have that element of like, these two shouldn't mix, but they do, and it's gorgeous. And it's like, and that's what we really wanted to capture. It's this sense of like these two different perspectives seeing the same thing and trying to communicate in the same way and light. But yeah, it was really, the music is something that I'm so happy and proud of and just love. And I'm a massive, like, for me, it's all about game soundtracks and movie soundtracks. So it was so important to ensure that we captured that on a level that felt, again, representative of the experience that we wanted to give.
Yeah. Yeah. Genuinely. Yeah. We'll be listening to that soundtrack. Today I was listening to the Citizen Sleeper soundtrack. Like, I love a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, Into the Spider-Verse, that... is it What's Up Danger, the name of it, when he's jumped?
Yeah.
Like, when he becomes...
Oh, man. What? Yeah. So good.
Chills. Just chills every time.
Oh.
So what have you learned then about game development as part of this project? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, it's difficult. Is there anything that's in particular that has surprised you?
Oh, man. Oh, I think just the... I think the support and the love that people give, on a level that feels almost like... Basically, put it this way, everyone wants you to succeed. Everyone wants a good game. That's all that people want, right? And that's all they really care about. They want a good game. And so what's been really great is being in a position of making a game, sharing it, getting feedback, and seeing that feedback, not in the sense of like, oh my God, they hate me, they want me to, you know, they want me to burn. No, they're like, no, we just want this to be really cool. And this is where we feel like, you know, it could really excel in. So like, I think that's been a big lesson of like, you know, the sense that everyone actually, the community is actually very supportive, even though there is that loud minority where it does feel a bit like, you know, we don't want this, but actually really, truly, you know, across all that, there is so much love to that, you know, people want to just give and share. And I'd say, you know, the other aspect of sort of game dev that really sort of that I've learned a hell of a lot from is just, again, how long it takes to make a game and just how, like, how much work is needed to do that. And communication is key, man. Like, it is so important. You know, I mean, like, I kind of look at it, like, we've been building this game for 4 years. I've done... like two feature films, three seasons of TV, and directed a short film at the same time, all in the space of just making this one game. You know, it's insane. Like, it really takes a long time. And so you've got to really also think, like, the amount of work that's been put into this thing, even though to most people it would have been, you know, they would have been aware of this game just from the Game Awards to now. Mm-hmm. We've known this game for years, you know?
You said 4 years ago. So was it like during kind of lockdown that...
Yeah, mate. Sparked? Yeah, I pitched this game over Zoom. And I'm amazed that EA said yes.
Brilliant. That's incredible. Now, yeah, I'll...
Well, I was going to say as well, it's called Tales of Kenzera, which is obviously plural. Is the plan that this sort of, you know, Kenzera becomes like a universe, becomes a series with more stories to tell?
That's the plan. So, like, for me, I'm a big believer of, again, telling stories within the right medium and respecting the medium you tell it in. And again, coming back to what I said, it's like, if I had the opportunity of doing something once, I got to make it really big. So for me, Tales of Kinzera is a universe that I've got this idea and plan of how I want it to evolve and aspire to, and the stories that I want to tell in it, you know, pulled again from that same space of real authenticity and honesty, the human truth. It goes beyond, you know, race, gender. It's raw and real. Like, that is really where I'm wanting to pull from and what I want to tell. Again, obviously, it depends on how successful Tales of Kinzera is ours, but, like, at the same time, I'm like, I do want to go big with it, you know, and I do have this, you know, I do want to tell multiple stories and multiple elements of it all, be it through film, TV, comics, games, theatre. Like, there's a whole plan that I have with it all.
Oh, brilliant. So, yeah, completely multi...
Yeah, multimedia, kind of, hitting, just transcending media in a way. But again, it's about respecting the medium you tell it in, right? Like, I couldn't imagine Zao being a TV show or even like a film. It had to be a game. It had to be experienced through the mechanics of what it was. So that's why, you know, that's why I told it in a game. Other stories, however, will be shared in different ways and different lights.
Yeah. Brilliant. Now, so what is next for you? Are you going to be continuing with your acting? So it sounds like you were incredibly busy during this, but are you going to put more time into game development? Or
I mean, I've got to raise a baby. No, it's building the studio, right, and telling more stories with the studio, as well as doing the acting stuff as well. Like, I love it as well, and you know, with House of the Dragon literally around the corner, like, it's something that I really just want to dive more into. So yeah, there's all sorts of stuff kicking off, and I'm planning and cooking. So it's going to be very busy, you know. My aim is to retire by 40, so I've got now 9 years.
Wow. I've only got a few years left. Until
you've got like four.
No chance of me doing that. But so will your studio be kind of focused on just on games, or are you going to, like you said, if you can?
Oh, we do everything. Yeah, we do everything. Whatever comes through. I think really, ultimately, again, like, I think the strength of us right now is our game studio, our game arm. We'll develop the film and TV arm as we go along. But like, yeah, I think for me, something that I just love making games, man. I love it. I love the process of playing something and experiencing it. So.
You got the bug now.
Yeah, it is a bug. It really is.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people listening to this or watching this that are going to be able to relate.
And are very excited about more.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So to finish up then, obviously this is a game that's about, you know, grief and about grieving, amongst other things. But what would you like players to take away from their experience when they play Tales of Kinzera?
Yeah, I think... It's funny, it's a good question, because it keeps evolving and changing. And I've said in the past, like, it's about, you know, essentially realizing that it's okay to not be okay. You know, I've said that, and it still stands. This idea that actually, you know, it's good to be aware of your emotions. That's the, you know, that's truly the kind of the thing that I want people to really going to take from it and see from it. It's like this sense of just being honest with yourself and authentic with yourself in the same way that I have been in creating the process of this game, as well as the game experience as a whole. Like, just being you is a lot more interesting than trying to be something else. But you know, over time, I've sort of, you know, and especially during this whole like press run and seeing people, you know, the reception of it all, I just want to inspire other people to tell cool stories like this. I think, like, I just want people to be inspired, to know that actually there is room for stories like this, honest stories, cool stories, different stories. People want it, you know, and actually, you know, take that and run with it. You know, just be inspired by it. I want to inspire people. The fact that, like, I am, you know, I'm an actor who had no idea how to make games 4 years ago. No idea. Now I've got, you know, I'm about to launch our first game with EA, you know, to reviews coming out left, right, and center. Like, it's like, you know, it's a thing, but it's possible. As long as, you know, you don't have to. Don't restrict yourself, essentially, is what I'm trying to say here. It's like you can do whatever you want.
I think a lot of people are craving something different as well from gaming, and this from playing it absolutely fills that gap. Like it's like nothing else that I've played, especially in terms of the storytelling and the setting and things. So that for me is why it really stands out. And I mean, best of luck for, you know, release date next week.
I think with the Game Awards, I think at the Game Awards as well, that was something that really resonated, was that it was a surprise. Like it was something different because you all expect kind of the sequels, and obviously not to put down anything, any other types of genres or other games, but like it was something really fresh.
Do it then, do it.
No, like I generally play all sorts of games, so I won't, but like, yeah, it was something, it wasn't a sequel. It was just something completely new, something fresh, and something that had like a real identity behind it as well.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Brilliant. And
oh boy.
Yeah, thank you so much. And yeah, for those listening or watching, Tales of Kinzera's Out is out on the 23rd of April. And it's on, it's on everything. It's on PC, Switch, PS5, Xbox Series X, S.
Yep.
It's
and PS Plus if you're
PS Plus if you got it, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything.
You can play it on so many different ways.
Well, look, Avi, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Really, really appreciate it. And as we said, best of luck with the launch.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. And where can people find you on socials?
I'm everywhere, man. Like, so the studio is we're on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, because it is called Twitter.
I refuse to as well.
What a weird name. Anyway, it's still even twitter.com. Anyway, it's that.
And that's Surgeon Studios.
Yeah, Surgeon Studios, but I'm on Instagram and Twitter as well. Abzi Salim on Instagram, and then on Twitter I'm Abzi Babzi. So yeah, because some fool took Abzi Babzi on Instagram, and I'll hunt them down till the end of my days.
I still rant at the person that has biggest Bennis that hasn't tweeted since 2010.
Anyway,
tell me about it. Yeah, we'll follow the links below. Follow the links below anyway, so anyone can click on it as well.
Amazing.
But yeah, thank you so much again for joining us, and for everybody else for watching and listening. I hope you enjoy Tales of Kinzera, and I hope you've enjoyed this this interview. And yeah, it's. I can't wait to listen back to it, to be honest.
Thank you.
And while especially, and then go and play it, because yeah, I'm quite jealous that you've already done that.
Yeah, I won't spoil anything.
I obviously didn't break any embargo, so I couldn't play it, but I did like definitely have a little look. But yeah,
brilliant. Amazing.
Watching, thank you very much for watching. If you go to swappingjoysticks.com, you can get access to all our kind of social channels and our Twitter and previous episodes as well. Check them out all on YouTube or on any place that you get your podcast from.
Nice. Perfect. And we'll see you all next time.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.